Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Rich Lenkoff, you hear him often on WGN Radio, a partner at Bryce Downey & Lenkoff, the co-host of the podcast called Legal Face-Off, which we host here at WGN. Hi, Rich. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. How are you?
I want to start with this soundbite.
I felt that Derek Chauvin was justified and was acting with objective reasonableness following Minneapolis Police Department policy and current standards of law enforcement and his interactions with Mr. Floyd.
So there is soundbite number one for you, sir. That's the defense's turn now. What did you hear yesterday?
I heard a disastrous testimony from that use of force expert as well as some others. It was disastrous in a number of ways. If you just listen to the clip that you just heard, there's nothing else that you would need to hear as a juror, John, that would make you think this guy was credible. We already heard from the Minneapolis police chief saying that that technique was not standard procedure. You know, so this guy just coming out and saying that that is accepted procedure, I don't know what planet he's living on. It certainly wasn't the standard that multiple officers have testified to that are actually working today. This guy is not, you know, he's a professional expert. By the way, he's also the expert that went a long way towards losing the case in the Laquan McDonald case that we're also familiar with here. He was the expert hired by the defense in the Laquan McDonald trial that led to that officer, Van Dyke, being put in jail. So, you know, if you're vetting your expert and you ask him, oh, yeah, tell me about your, you know, prior trial experience, and he tells you, I was partially responsible for, you know, one of the only times an officer has gone to jail, probably not a guy that you would hire for this case.
Wait a minute. In the Laquan McDonald case, you're talking about the Laquan McDonald case, the shooting here in Chicago.
Same expert.
And I'm sorry. And did he testify at that the officer was justified in shooting McDonald?
Yes, absolutely. And the fans in this case thought, that's just the kind of expert I want to to buttress my case.
Okay, but if the side A makes that point, you want to, as side B, come up with something to sort of counteract that. And if the police chief isn't going to do it, then you've got to go outside and find somebody, don't you?
Yeah, but not this guy. I mean, you know, you need someone with authority. And just from basic sort of trial techniques, this guy was not a likable person. I know that might seem a little bit overly simplistic, but it's not. Jurors like make a decision, like many human beings, yeah, within a few minutes, and they, unfortunately, you would like to think, John, that jurors are, you know, bastions of the law and they only determine things based on the law. It's not true. They base things on how people look, talk, act, body language, and this guy was just angry. He was he didn't come across strong. He looks like every, you know, officer that people have problems with, right? He's just, his whole demeanor was very confrontational, was very hostile. And then the big takeaway that I took from his testimony was that police don't have to fight fair. Now, I get it, right? Police are able to escalate the situation and use more force than, you know, the alleged perpetrator. But as a juror sitting there in the box after hearing all of the testimony that led to George Floyd's death, you hear the main expert for the defense say, police don't have to fight fair. That's what you're going to think about when you're in that jury box.
Okay.
So it wasn't a great day for the defense at all.
I appreciate your expertise because you are. I heard that testimony. In fact, let's pause here. We'll come back and I'll play the soundbite that you're talking about. And it's really remarkable. But the question is this a reasonable point if you're the defense? In fact, if you're the police, isn't this the truth? Isn't this what you should do? Isn't this a reasonable thing to say? Or is it the disaster that Rich is painting it as after this? Rich Lenkoff, the attorney, watching the Derek Chauvin trial in Minneapolis with us. And I'm just going to play the soundbite that you referenced here. All right, Rich, and let's just talk a little bit about the testimony. This is the defense's use of force expert, a person that you described a moment ago, say, well, here's what he said.
Did you refer to kind of an increase of level of force to overcome the resistance? How would you describe that?
Police terminology is called one-upmanship. So, you know, police officers don't have to fight fair. They're allowed to overcome your resistance by going up a level.
Probably shouldn't have said don't have to fight fair.
That is the soundbite of the trial. That is what, if I was the prosecutor, I'd be drilling into the jurors as they back to the jury box. Listen, as any good trial lawyer will tell you, we are always looking for sound bites. People's attention spans are very limited, as you know, especially in this age of, you know, instant gratification, instant media. If you could latch on to a sound bite like that, that is enough to get your conviction in and of itself, in my opinion. By the way, we talked earlier. I just want to read you October 2nd, 2018, Barry Broad, that same person that you just quoted, said in the Laquan McDonald trial, he told jurors he believes the shooting was justified. Okay, so back to your point. Yeah, that's a terrible quote. If you're a juror, don't you think, John, that doesn't the police department owe me a duty of being fair to me?
Okay.
And we just had the defense expert saying police don't have to be fair.
All right, but now I'm guilty of the same thing that you just said, and that is I played a soundbite. I should have, and I probably could, play a longer quote in which what his point is that if you and I are fighting at an even level, you're punching me, I'm punching you, I can now escalate the level of violence so as to subdue you. That's what he's talking about. So is that fighting fair? I get his point that if you've got a knife, I've got a gun. If you've got a gun, I've got an atomic bomb. I'm the law and I need to subdue you. So that's what he was trying to say.
That's all true. But that quote is terrible. And the idea that, listen, jurors will understand that the police can use more force. Is more force 929 of kneeling on some on George Floyd's neck? Of course not. And by the way, like I said earlier, this Barry Broad character, he looks like every angry cop that's ever pulled you over in the world. His whole demeanor was so confrontational, so hostile, that the jurors have to be sitting there thinking, this is the best guy they got. And by the way, he probably is. He's probably the only guy that you can get because of the, you know, overwhelming evidence against Chauvin. So I think it was a really bad day for a lot of reasons for the defense yesterday.
Did you refer to kind of an increase of level of force to overcome the resistance? How would you describe that?
Police terminology is called one-upmanship. So, you know, police officers don't have to fight fair. They're allowed to overcome your resistance by going up a level.
That's the guy that Eric Nelson, the defense attorney, called. I thought Eric Nelson has been doing a pretty good job, at least when the state was presenting his case, when the prosecution was sort of popping holes in that. Like, for instance, when the chief of police for Minneapolis said that that was unacceptable behavior by Derek Chauvin, Nelson then said, when's the last time you were out in the street? When's the last time you had to subdue somebody? He said, it's been a long time. Oh, well, then maybe you don't know what it's like out there. I thought, when the prosecution was making his case, I thought that Nelson was doing a pretty good job of counterpunching. Remember, he's working with their witnesses. But so far, you're disappointed with what he's been able to bring to the stand.
I'm not impressed, John. You have to start off your case in chief with a bang. You have to remember, these are witnesses yesterday and then going on today that the defense controls. So if you're controlling the witnesses and you know how effective they're going to be because you spent hours and hours of your life preparing them,
yeah,
how do you not put on the strongest witnesses first, right? The EMT we saw yesterday, she was a mess. I mean, no offense to her. She's probably a nice woman, but she was a mess. You know, I have a lot of friends and colleagues and legal analysts who tell me they weren't sure if she was defense or a prosecution witness. You know, she was mumbly. She was unsure of herself. She laughed. I counted in only about 20 minutes of testimony, maybe five times she laughed, and I get it. People are nervous. She probably wasn't making. But if you're a juror and you're trying to decide whether George Floyd was, you know, murdered on the streets of Minneapolis, you don't want anyone laughing about that, whether it's nervous or not. She was really, really a poor witness. And again, I think that's evidence of the poor job overall that the defense is doing. By the way, I don't think the prosecutors are doing that great of a job either. With Barry Broad, you know, the jurors are looking for a little bit of excitement. They've been sitting here now for 3 weeks with a lot of boring witnesses. Barry Broad provided the state an ample chance to, like, really hit that guy pretty hard and make it a little bit exciting.
Yeah.
Not to say every trial is going to be like Law and Order, but you got to wake him up. And they missed a golden chance to do that, I think.
I almost thought that Nelson could have, after that use of force witness said that the police don't have to fight fair. I wonder if he didn't want to shine a light on that, but there it was. Maybe he should have said, and by that, don't you mean that? Right.
Right.
I wonder if he should have tried to amend that. And as you say, maybe that the prosecution should have drilled down on that point even further. We probably haven't heard the last reference to that. But back to your point about Michelle Mosung, she's the retired EMT who you said did not do the defense any favors. This is part of her testimony.
You were concerned about his blood pressure at that time, correct?
That was one of the things.
And...
okay, an extremely short soundbite there, but maybe you at least get the sense of she was mumbly, she was looking down, she did have awkward smiles at times, maybe attributed to nerves. You know, though, you talk about this as a sort of performance, Rich. And you're right, we like to think of jurors as arbiters of fairness. They're not going to rely on emotional responses. They want to hear the facts and decide the guilt or innocence of somebody. But we're all human beings. We can't help but be influenced by these things, right?
No question. And no one expects anyone to be an actor or a professional. In fact, the best witnesses are the ones who are not rehearsed. But you have to answer the question asked. You have to enunciate and articulate your answers. You have to look jurors in the eye. Contrast her, John, with the cardiologist we heard on the last day of the prosecution case in chief. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, that guy's a professional, and he's probably testified hundreds of times. But he was looking the jury in the eye. He was very conversational. He explained everything clearly. He articulated. He was loud. He wasn't looking down. Those basic things are what makes a witness credible. You know, besides what they say, the substance, how they say it couldn't be more important. And I think she just lost the jury yesterday by looking down, by being mumbly, by not answering the question asked, and by laughing a few times.
Well, you only have to convince one juror, right?
Right.
The prosecution needs to convince every juror. The defense only needs to convince one that what Chauvin did was justified, and then Chauvin walks. Eric Zorn in the Tribune today has a column about the spark of life. It's something my friend Susie Jones talks about a lot. One of the last pieces of testimony we heard for the prosecution was his brother, George Floyd's brother, talking about how he and George would cook pancakes. And when they mentioned their late mother, he broke down into tears. And so this quote-unquote spark of life testimony is a way to sort of bring George Floyd to life in a favorable way. I guess I say all of that to ask you, how likable is George Floyd in this case? Because maybe that's in one juror's mind. I don't care. I don't like that guy. He was a bad guy. He was resisting arrest.
It's a great question. I mean, yesterday we heard from the woman that was in the car who said that he fell asleep at the wheel before the police came to interact with him. I mean, to me, that doesn't paint a great light on George Floyd. I mean, it was the middle of the day. He had just come from the store, and he falls asleep. That's obviously evidence that he was, pretty heavily medicated.
Yeah.
So I don't know that George Floyd, listen, he's certainly not the most sympathetic person in the world. So I think that is a bit of a problem for the prosecution. Does that mean that any person, no matter how unlikable, no matter how many drugs they have in their system, deserves to be knelt on with, that amount of pressure for 9.5 minutes? Of course not. So I do think that was not the best day in terms of the testimony we heard from the female yesterday. At the end of the day, is that going to matter? Probably not.
Rich Lankoff is a partner at Bryce Downey & Lankoff, co-host of Legal Face-Off. That podcast is hosted here at WGN Radio, and it, of course, is excellent. It's nice to talk to you, Rich. I'll call you again later this week.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.